This is a podcast from Real Life Sango in Clarksville, Tennessee. Thank you for being a part of our growing online community. We hope that you'll soon be able to join us on a Sunday morning, but in the meantime, you can text prayer request by texting the word prayer to 931-378-6778. And you can make a financial investment by texting any amount to 84321 or going to reallifesango.com/give. Now, enjoy the podcast.
Freddie is gone today. He has asked the four elders last week and this week to preach. And so Bing Verbis and I picked the short straw. Sorry, Paul. We get the shrewd manager. So has anybody ever read Luke 16, The Shrewd Manager? Raise your hand. It's going to be interactive. Thank you, John. I like that. Yeah. So Shrewd Manager has been said as one of the most complicated and confusing parables of all Jesus' teaching. And so Bing and I get the joy of trying to unravel it this morning. I have a favorite preacher from Cleveland, Ohio. Anybody from Cleveland, Ohio today? Nobody. His name is Alistair Begg. Yeah, we heard, that's right, Truth for Life, that's right, 8 o'clock on WNKJ. Alistair Begg is a Scottish preacher, super good, and he has this quote: when you read the Bible, or when you preach the word, you need to make the main thing the plain thing. So, if you know me well, I can confuse the easiest things, so today I'm going to try to make the main thing, the plain thing. So are you ready? Here's the ending. Now I can quit preaching. There's the answer. You cannot serve God and mammon. So this morning, if you open up to Luke 16, you can go ahead and do that. Luke 16, I hope. Now, you said that, Mason. I hope it's 16. That's what I was prepared. 16, verse 13, I think it's 13, says, you may not use the word mammon in your Bible, but it may say money. So we're going to talk about this word mammon and the word money. So when Freddie said he gave me 6 weeks to prepare for this, I said if I ever had to preach, give me about 6 hours, right, Bing? So I don't have to worry about it. So I probably overstudied for this today. But I said, give me some advice. What should I do? He said, preach it, don't teach it. But I've been a teacher for 30 years, and Freddie's not here, so I'm probably going to teach it. He also said I had 45 minutes for my sermon. Lily Wyatt, Susan just giggled. Lily Wyatt's watching after me in my 45 minutes. It's not 45, it's 30 minutes. We're going to do this for 30 minutes. She's watching after me. I just looked at the time. Okay, so this morning, I guess you have to have a title. So close to our title is this word. I hope it's the right screen. Look at that. That's not the title. Context. So the word context, if you were in a Sunday school class, I hate to call her out, but we have walked in this morning right in front of us was an old small group person. Yeah, Bethany, there you are. Just out of the blue, hadn't seen her in years. 2 years, has it been? But she knows how we work. This would be the hook if you were in my class. But this is the word context. So the word context means, I hope, context means the circumstances that form the setting for an event, statement, or idea, and in terms of which it can be fully understood or assessed. Who understands that? Nobody. It's where something makes sense. It's the environment of which something should exist to make sense, to be purposeful. So today, Luke 16 is going to seem, verse 8, is out of context. So today, we're going to look and we're going to try to think through what it is to be out of context. Have you ever heard that phrase, out of context? Raise your hand. Come on. Make me feel good. That's right. Have you ever used a word out of context? Well, today, we're going to see about living out of context. I put that water bottle so I'm going to spill it. All right. So, before we jump into Luke 16, I think it's highly important, having studied this over and over and over and over again, I think it's very important to have a little bit of background. And so, we're going to go through about 3 or 4 scriptures very quickly so that we can see Luke 16 in context. So let's look what this context is. You ready? We, you, are not a mistake. I say it every time I'm up here. You are not a mistake. You are not here on accident, because you were created on purpose. So Psalm 139, it may be worth you flipping there. It's super, super good stuff. Psalm 139, verse 13. And this is what it says. For you formed my inward parts. You knitted me together in my mother's womb. I praise you, for I'm fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works. My soul knows it very well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was being made in secret, intricately woven in the depths of the earth. Your eyes saw my unformed substance. In your book were written every one of them. Don't miss this. The days that were formed for me, when as yet there was none of them. Matt Chandler, a favorite preacher of mine, he's in Dallas, Texas, at the Village Church. Anybody heard of Matt? Anybody listen to Matt? Yeah, Matt's good. So he actually had started a new series, and 2 weeks ago, maybe a week ago, he preached on Psalm 139, which was really, really good. And this word context, if you look at the Latin, I used to teach Latin in another lifetime, but if you look at that word context, it actually means to weave together. So if something's in context, it's there. It's meant to be there. It's stuck. It was made that way. And if you look at verse 13 and 14, that 14, I praise you, for I'm fearfully and wonderfully made. That word wonderfully is not like wonder. It actually means to be woven together. And he actually goes on in verse 15 and says, my frame was not hidden when I was being made in secret, intricately woven in the depths of the earth. You were woven by God for purpose. Okay? And so I think what we're going to try to look at today is we're going to look at verse 8 of Luke 16, which makes this parable very, very difficult. But I hope that what we can see today is that we, when we live out of context, we break the patchwork of what God created us to do. All right. I'll finish with 16 one more time. So it says, my eyes saw my unformed substance. In your book were written every one of them, the days that were formed for me. That, its word, is to be fashioned, made with purpose, ordained. Listen, it says, before there were days ever created, God knew you, made you, and knew what you were ordained to do. That's heavy. Don't you think? Anybody think that's heavy? I think it's, thank you, Paul. He's just trying to support. Let's go to Genesis 1. So if you were created on purpose, did I hammer that one home? If you were created on purpose, you were also created, thanks Eric, for a purpose. All right. So Genesis 1 and 2. Bethany, I know you're surprised I'm doing Genesis 1 and 2 this morning, but yes, Genesis 1 and 2, it's my favorite two chapters of the whole Bible. Genesis 1 says in verse 27, so God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. Not going to go through that this morning. That's how God created us in his image. That clock. And God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it and have dominion over everything that I created. So when Adam was made, he wasn't made to frolic in the garden. Adam was made to be a manager over God's creation. I call that the horizontal purpose, our horizontal covenant that God created. He created us for a mission, and that was, I'm going to give you everything that I've created, and you are going to manage it. But you're going to manage it on this backdrop, this context, and that's Genesis 2:15, my favorite verse. So let's read it. 2:15. The Lord God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to work it and keep it. Now, for about 7 or 8 years, I've taught Genesis 2:15, and it may be a stretch, but I don't think so. But if you look at these Hebrew words, to work it and to keep it, they are agricultural words. You could see that he's, you know, vine dressing and all that stuff. But if you look at these words, work it and keep it, it really has priestly language to it. When it says to work it, it actually means to serve what the Creator does. You're serving God. And that word to keep it actually means to observe the order in which he has created the garden. You see that in Revelation 21 when he brings everything back to new again. There's this order. There was an order of things. God created not us on purpose, but he created his creation on purpose, and that had an order to it. And we were the managers. We were given the duty to manage his creation and keep the order, and that is rule one, you serve God and observe the order in which he's created. And one of those things in order was don't touch the fruit of the knowledge, tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And we did. And things unravel. Okay. You're created on purpose. You're created for purpose. It's context. We're woven into what God created us to do. Now let's go to Luke 16. What you came for, I'm sure. Luke 16. The shrewd manager. So Freddie's been preaching. Paul and Chuck preached last week. But Luke 16 is a continuation of what Jesus has been teaching his disciples since Luke 14. And if you remember 2 or 3 weeks ago, I have no idea how long I've been preaching. If you remember 2 or 3 weeks ago, in Luke 14, Freddie sat on this stage and said, you have to hate whom? Well, pretty much everybody, including yourself. And he went through this whole word hate. And so we then had Luke 15, after the salt and saltiness out on the land, we had Luke 15 where we talk about the lost sheep, the lost coin, and then, of course, last week with the lost son, the prodigal son. And so today we're going to look at Luke 16, and it seems like this thing's not going to make sense, especially when you get to verse 8. And I've said how many times, verse 8, don't read verse 8 yet. I know you've already read it. But don't read verse 8 because it's very important that we understand it in context. So let's go through it. Parable of the shrewd manager. So the word parable is a straightforward word. It actually means to take something and cast it down beside something. And when you use that word parable in the Greek, you're casting down this story, which is not necessarily a true story, but you're casting this story down right next to the truth of which it's supposed to illustrate. And usually a parable tries to illustrate a truth. Okay? And I've already given it away. You can't serve God and mammon. So if you look at Luke 16, we're setting the story up. We got two folks going on. Kind of three, but two folks going on. So let's read it. He also said to the disciples, there was a rich man who had a manager. Stop. So we have two people. We got a rich man, and we got the guy that's managing his riches. Okay? And the riches is what he's managing is accounts. So there was a rich man who had a manager, and charges were brought to him that this man was wasting his possessions. He was given a job to manage the accounts of the rich man, and someone ratted him out. Drinking too much coffee, on too much on the internet, I don't know what he was doing. But he wasn't doing his job, and a whistleblower comes and says, he's not doing his job. And let's see what happens. And he called him and said to him, what is this I hear about you? Turn in the account of your management, for you can no longer be manager. The crisis. If you watch Nickelodeon, I do a lot. I got a 7-11-year-old. This is the crisis. Oh, my goodness, you know. And so what's going to happen? Here's what's going to happen. And the manager said to himself, "What shall I do since my master is taking the management away from me? I am not strong enough to dig, and I am ashamed to beg. I have decided what to do." The voila moment. You ready? "So that when I am removed from management, people may receive me into their houses." So summoning his master's debtors one by one, he said to the first, "How much do you owe my master?" And he said, 100 measures of oil. He said to him, "Take your bill and sit down quickly and write 50. Now, I have been in collections before for banks, and this is a huge write-down. But what's he doing? I don't know if he's worried about the collections. "So, summoning his master's debtors one by one, he said to the first, 'How much do you owe me?' He said, 100 measures of oil. He said to him, 'Take your bill and sit down quickly and write 50. Then he said to another, 'And how much do you owe?' He said, 100 measures of wheat. He said to him, 'Take your bill and write 80. By the way, these are phenomenal numbers. Maybe worth a year's worth of wages for a common wager. And the master commended, here it is, the master commended the dishonest manager for his shrewdness." Isn't that cool? No one's smiling. No one's like, "Huh?" That's right, Mason. Doesn't make sense. The man who wasn't doing his job and just stole indirect money from his master, the master commends him for making him lose money. Is that confusing? I can't wait to see what Bing says about that next service. Well, it was very confusing for me. And even more confusing, that's the end of the parable, by the way, because Jesus picks it up and it starts interpreting his parable, verse 9. "For the sons of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own generation than the sons of light. And I tell you, make friends for yourselves by means of unrighteous wealth, so that when it fails, they may receive you into the eternal dwellings." Leverage what you've got. That's what the sons of darkness do. The sons of this age leverage what's before them for their own benefit. Leveraging one man's riches for their better return on investment, no matter what happens to the person they're serving. That's what the rich man just got commended for. And Jesus says, those folks, the sons of this age, understand the concept of, understand the concept of what they have been given. They're making the investment of return for that. Unfortunately, they're doing it for themselves. So don't get lost here. The manager wasn't godly, he was shrewd, because he understood the concept of being a manager. But the problem he had, and what Jesus was saying after this, was he was right here in the way he looked. Everything was here. What he could see, what he could touch, what he could feel, what his investment account looked like, what his retirement was going to be. But at least he understood the concept that I can use what is in my hands today for my benefit down the road. And what Jesus said was, "And I tell you, make friends for yourselves by means of unrighteous wealth, so that when it fails, they may receive you into the eternal dwellings." That eternal dwellings is Revelation 21 talk. That means the tabernacle of which God has waiting for us after this life. What he's saying was, there's something more than what's before you. We have flesh. We have ideas. We have pain. We have sickness. We have jobs. We got bills. We got houses. We got stuff. But there's something more to this life than that. It's raging behind us. We just can't see it. It's the spiritual realm. Remember, we don't fight and wage war with principalities. It's the spiritual that's behind us. And what we don't want to see is we want to keep our eyes sitting right here because it's easier, right? I got to go to a job. I got to go make money. I got bills. I got kids. You just don't even know. this guy I work with, this girl, just incessantly. We are so, it's so difficult for us to see that what is really there is something that we can't see, which is affecting and impacting what we do. Jesus says, we've got to get our eyes off of today, but use what he has given us so that when we are on the other side in the eternal dwelling, that we will have used the mammon for today for the benefit and the glory of tomorrow. No different than Adam, God has given us dominion, this horizontal job to manage his stuff. And unfortunately, we're managing this stuff for our own benefit. And in fact, it just doesn't work. Let's go on. We're done. We're getting there. Verse 10. One who is faithful in a very little is also faithful in much. And one who is dishonest in very little is also dishonest in much. If then you have not been faithful in the unrighteous wealth, who will entrust to you the true riches? And if you have not been faithful in what in that which is another's, who will give that which is your own? No servant can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. Already gave you the end. You cannot serve God and mammon. That word hate is exactly the same word we had in Luke 14. You hate your father and your mother. You got to hate. This hate is not like hate. This hate is a priority thing. You've got to put things in proper priority. Remember Genesis 2:15? We are to serve our Creator and observe the order of which he's done things. We can't get the stuff in front of the Creator of the stuff, the created before the Creator. Because when we do that, it's not like he just waits to slap us. He's like, it just doesn't work that way. Remember, you were created on purpose, woven together the way God wove you together, and he created you for purpose. And when we get both of those out of line, misery, discontentment, frustration, sadness, discouragement occurs. We keep hitting the wall over and over and over and over and over again. You cannot serve God and mammon. That mammon's a cool word. It's an old, old word that actually means, in the original, something that was entrusted to you, which later morphed into something you trust in, and later became money. But the original part of that word was something was entrusted to you of which now you trust completely in over the top of what God is and what he created you for. You cannot serve your Creator, the one who made you on purpose for a purpose, if you're letting the stuff that he's asked you to manage get in the way. What is that stuff? Well, it's all kinds of stuff. It's social media, it's job, it's kids, it's family, it's the thing, it's your social, it's whatever you're trying to attain. And when you do it over and over, you just keep getting frustrated. It's like, this is not making sense. So I had a client. I'm awful at jokes. I wish my father-in-law were here. He tells jokes great. But there was a client, a good friend. He was in my office. He was going through this business problem he had, and he was like, I said, I don't understand. He says, well, let me tell you the watermelon salespeople. You ever heard of this watermelon joke? You probably have. I'm going to destroy this joke. So two salespeople were living here in this state, and they said, I got an idea. We're going to get a truck, and we're going to go buy some watermelons in another state. Thank you, Eric. And we're going to bring them back home, and we're going to sell them, and we're going to make some money. So they go and buy a truck, and they get in the truck, and they go down, and they buy 100 watermelons for $100. Anybody heard this joke yet? Oh, great. So fun. And they drive all the way back home, and they set up stand, and they got these 100 watermelons, and they put them on sale for $1 a watermelon, and they sell out in 2 hours. And one salesman looks at the other one and says, well, we sold out our watermelons, but I don't know if we made much money. What do you think we need to do? Anybody know? We need a bigger truck. I know, I didn't get it either first time, so let's go through it again. They want to make money. They bought a they buy a water mountain for a dollar. They come back and sell a water mountain for a dollar. And don't make any money. And their answer is, let's just do more of the same. All right. Double down. Triple down. Quadruple down. Let's just do it over and over and over again, because eventually it's going to work. That's called foolishness. You remember the salt is good in Luke 14? But when salt loses its saltiness, that word saltiness is not the word saltiness in the Greek. It actually says when it's become moronic, foolish. When salt doesn't become salt anymore. What's salt supposed to be? You can say it. What's salt supposed to be? Salt. And when salt is no longer salt, it's not any use, because that's why it was created, to be salt. The patchwork doesn't work. The weaving together unweaves. We become out of context. The purpose of your creation is frustrated, and you will become frustrated. So why do we become out of context with why we were created and for what we were created? And I think one of the reasons is because we don't trust the one who created us. We have a better solution. He doesn't understand my problem. Just like Adam and Eve did in Genesis 3:6. They got this. I got this. You just don't. If I understood what evil was, I would be a better good person. And the order was broken. The purpose was broken. So they just didn't trust. They didn't trust God. And in fact, all these words in verses 10 through 13, this faith, this mammon, all these words are trust words. So Proverbs 3, 5, and 6, I'll be done. I hope I'm done. Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. This is a coffee cup verse. You know why I know that? Because I had a coffee cup that had Proverbs 3, 5, and 6 for many, many, many years. Let's read it, and I'll be done. Trust in the Lord with all your heart, and do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him, and he will make straight your paths. Or yours may say, he will direct your paths. This word trust, in its original form, means take refuge in. It's being confident completely. Completely confident, taking refuge in everything that you are and everything that you have. Not going to buy a bigger truck, but take what has been given to you today. Do you understand that what you have, the talents that you possess, the characteristics that God's given you, whether that's good or bad, I have flat feet and a bump on my back. That's who I am. And God has given that to me intentionally for a purpose. And when I choose to go my purposes myself, it doesn't work. The weaving comes unglued, and I become out of context. My little girl. Oh, there it is. There you go. There you go. My little girl. There she is. Hi, Nella. She had a little memory verse test. You can see the top right up there. Takes after her mama. But she had to write Proverbs 3:5 for a memory verse. But you see the bottom, it says, it's hard to see. Ellie, can you see it back there? It's probably hard to see. When can you trust God in your life? Can you see what she said? Every second of the day. And I would add, with everything that you have. Because when you do not, and I do not, but when you do not, it doesn't work. All you're doing is buying a bigger truck. Worship team, this is your alert. Worship team, come on. The hook's coming. I'm way over, ain't I? I don't know either. I'm not keeping the time up either. But as the worship team comes, oh, there they are. As the worship team comes, what I would like for us to think about is God has given you management. He's given you accounts. What are you going to do with those accounts? What are you going to do that what God's given before you to do and to be? And if you're not doing what God's purposed you to do, it's not going to work. So if you've never, ever, ever, ever said, God, I can't do this. I've tried my way. It does not work. And you know that He's the only one that can bring you back into a purposeful life. You need to go see those two nice people in the back, because they're going to sit down with you and say, this is what Jesus has done for you. He hasn't just created you on purpose for a purpose, but He has come back down to save you from that. And you can live a life of contentment. Y'all can play. I love this guitar playing. But you said, I've already done that. And I've already been baptized, and my life's pretty good. I've got the house, and I've got the kids, I've got the car, and whatever. The worst thing that can you do today, the worst thing you can do today, is to walk out those two doors there and walk out the other two doors outside of the city forum and get on your phone and look for a bigger truck. That's what we're all going to do today, unfortunately, but maybe one of you won't. Maybe you're saying, you know, this is the day that I'm going to see what God has given to me to manage, to be a steward of, and I'm actually going to not do the same thing I did yesterday because it didn't work yesterday. I am going to take a hold of what God's given me to do, and that is to honor Him with everything that I am and everything that I have. You cannot serve God and mammon. You can't do it. It's impossible. So don't try. Don't buy a bigger truck. Lord, thank you so much for your word. What would we do without your word? We wouldn't know who you are. We wouldn't know what to do. You're a loving God, steadfastly. You have always loved us. Thank you that you have created us on purpose and for purpose. Thank you that you have given us what you have given us so that we can give back to those for the future glory of their eternal dwellings. In your most precious name we pray. Amen.
Thank you for listening. We trust that God is stirring something fresh in your heart today. We hope to see you on a Sunday very soon. Keep it real, keep it Jesus.